So what I wanted to talk about tonight in the part four of this this series on the halachos of death and mourning are just a brief review of some of the halachos that were here of Shiva, Shloshim, and Yud Beis Chodesh. There are a lot of halachos, and they all have details, so we're not going to have time to go through all these, and certainly not very carefully, but at least you'll have a basic idea of what the different areas are. Again, I may have missed some along the way, that's for sure, but these are like the main ones. And again, so, you know, some of the, those of you who are familiar with these halachos already, so just as a review, in case there was anything you missed at some point, or those of you who are not as familiar, so this will be a good opportunity to go through them. And some of these issues, we'll spend a few minutes trying to flesh out some of the details, okay? Some of the more common ones that, you know, get asked often, at least that I've gotten asked often, and I'm assuming Rorlin also has gotten asked often, we'll spend a few extra minutes talking about those a little more in depth. Some of the different opinions and some of the ambiguities, etc., etc. Okay, so we'll start with Shiva. Last week we spoke about the Nihugi Beis HaAvel, just the different practices in the Beis HaAvel itself in terms of, again, we mentioned mirrors, we mentioned tefillah practices, other types of customs, etc., etc. Here, these issues are basically the halachos that are specifically focused on the Avel himself, or herself, or themselves, meaning which issues are they limited by in terms of their observance of the laws of Shiva. So here I wrote here 11 different things, which are all mentioned. Well, some of these are on the source sheet, some of them are not. But we could look at them inside at least the list. If you look at source number one, so the list here actually mentions almost all these things and a few that are not here. Eilat Varim, this is the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Pei in Yoradeh. Eilat Varim Shavel Asurban. These are all things that are forbidden for in Avel while he's in Shiva. So the first one is Malacha. Okay, we're not going to go through this later. So just now, in terms of Malacha, this again is understood, I think. But you're not allowed to go to work while you are in Avelus, meaning while you're sitting Shiva. Again, there are a lot of details which we don't really have time for now. But in general, basically it means what it means. Okay, you can't go to work. You're not really supposed to be hiring other people to do your work for you. Again, there are all sorts of questions, obviously, if you're part of a partnership, etc., etc. We're not going to go into all the things now. But that's the basic rule, that you shouldn't be in your office. You obviously should be sitting, you know, Shiva. If there's a Shas at the Chak, you know, a Makom Hefsed, so there sometimes is Makom Lahakel, but again, it should be consulted on a personal basis. It's not something you can just say automatically, it's mutter. Not even in terms of you doing it yourself, but even in terms of, you know, hiring somebody else to do the work for you. You know, but there generally could be Makom Lahakel, but again, it just should be worked through the proper channels in terms of... So again, one could make the case that malacha means, you know, malacha doesn't mean, you know, a few minutes of, you know, emails here and there. But nevertheless, I would think that not only the spirit, also just the, you know, the mindset, the whole thing is should not be done. That again, I did not see that discussion directly in the postkim. I don't know if you've had any take on.
What happens when you're on vacation? What emails do you answer?
So the thing is, when you're on vacation, some people do check work emails. That's the problem. I think there should be more humble. Depending on who you are and how much of a workaholic you are.
I think you have to have an out-of-office mentality.
Right. That's for sure. Yeah. The question is, some people, you know, if you're an out-of-office mentality person that would check emails, then exactly. You still probably would say that, you know.
Even out-of-office, you know.
Right.
Definitely mistaber. The only two points I would add are that number one, sometimes you can get somebody else other than you to write the email or send it back. You know, you can give them instructions about what to say or not to say, and they'll write, he's busy now or whatever it is. Number two, I think also my impression, tell me if I'm wrong, my impression that most people, you know, their work environment, their offices, they know what's happening. You'll inform somebody at work what happened, and usually they realize that, you know, it's not, even if you're coming from a secular environment or even a non-Jewish environment, I don't think they're not going to bother you for at least the first couple of days and maybe even the whole week. They'll understand, and they usually will let you, you know, do what you need to do. That's my impression. I'm wrong.
I don't know.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. I mean,
it's
usually 3 days. So that's a question. I mean, I'm not sure if it covers the whole week, depending on where you are and who you're working for, if you're not, you know, from people.
I'm sorry,
so it's not the same. I think the same thing. So here it's interesting. I mean, the halachos maybe. So halachos maybe parallel. I mean, for Tisha B'av, right. Yeah. That's good. So Tisha B'av also, meaning they say it's the halachos are very parallel, but so they're also, you'd say that really you're not supposed to go to work if it's against something which is a hefsed or whatever, and it doesn't take a lot of effort or energy, then, you know, there may be room to make yel. The thing about Tisha B'av that they say specifically is that people, that somebody, if you do real malacha, meaning not just a couple minutes, you actually go real malacha, it could be that you'll never see, I think they say eino roa siman bracha, I mean, it's one of those cases where you're not going to actually see anything productive from the time that you go to work, even if you say, well, there may be a heter in that situation to do what you need to do. I don't remember if they say that, they mentioned that phrase here also, but again, the halachas on this issue of the malacha are roughly parallel, I think, from Tisha B'av to Avelus. Anyway, so that's the first thing. That's number one. Number two, in terms of leaving the house, so this, actually, no, we'll go through the rest of the list on the, we'll go through the Shulchan Aruch, we'll go in that order. Okay, back in source number one. So the first one was Malacha. Second one is Rechitza. Okay, so bathing. Bathing is generally usher during the week of Shiva. Did I put it on the sheet here? No, I didn't put it on the sheet. This is obviously a problem. Again, today this is a bit of a discussion because people today don't just go for a week or two without showering as they may have used to done in olden times. So again, there are discussions. This may be, you know, somewhat similar to some of the halachos also on Tisha B'av, which basically means that normally it's usur. Somebody who's what's called an istinist, who's very, very picky about what they do, that they have to, you know, bathe and whatever it is, you know, there may be room to be makil. There's a question about today, maybe everybody's an istinist. Ideally, the best thing would be to say that you don't bathe during the week. However, for many people, it's not practical. So basically, you have to, you know, you have to do the best that you can. And if you feel that you need to, you know, you need to bathe, to shower at some point during the week. So that, you know, there are some poskim that will say that it might be mutter in that situation. Do you have a?
Is it the same strictly
as
9 days, or is it more stricter?
So it's closer to like. Which then it's closer to Tisha B'Av, meaning Tisha B'Av in many ways, okay, the restrictions of Tisha B'Av parallel the restrictions of Shiva. So again, meaning some of the halachos that are mentioned basically also for Tisha B'Av, again, Tisha B'Av we're not, it's only one day, so it's a bit easier to deal with. But again, they say the main issur is what they call rechitza shel tanum, okay, for bathing for pleasure. So if you're doing it to make yourself clean from dirt, so again, there's, you know, if you're an istinist, there's more room to be makil. But again, the question is how many people can do that. What's clearly mutter is for medicinal purposes. That's clearly mutter. Okay, that's not considered to be, you know, bathing, which is usur. But again, you know, that's already pretty limited in terms of what's considered to be medicinal. You have to really have a rigorous definition of something where it's actually, you know, something that's going to cure you or some form of therapy or whatever it is to in order to bathe. I saw one example they talk about, not exactly in this case, but in terms of cutting hair if you have lice. Your kids have lice, so maybe they're cutting hair, even though it's normally not permitted, maybe if you have lice and you need to cut the hair. Which day? You're saying because here nobody cares anyway. Just leave it. Whatever it is. My point is that's the type of situation which one could, you know, define as being a situation of refuah, let's say. Other than that, again, you know, it's there's different approaches to how much you can be makil on just stom showering. Now, again, you know, if you really feel that you need it, there is some room to be makil, but it's not something you can just come along and say, okay, I'm just going to shower every day like I normally do. Obviously, that's not going to work very well. Okay, that's a brief overview of rechitza. Sicha, very similar. Sicha, of course, is anointing, which basically means use creams and other things like that, which, again, is also usually assumed to be, at least for this context, sicha shel tanug, something which gives you pleasure or enjoyment or makes you feel good. Again, if it's medicinal, which often may be, you know, you have cream that was prescribed, you know, by whatever, for whatever reason, or
to, you know, chapped skin, whatever, you know, parched skin, whatever the case is. So those types of things would generally probably be okay. But again, just to make it feel good, to, you know, what they call for pleasure purposes, would sicha would be also problematic during Shiva and also during Tisha B'Av. Okay. The next was an ilas sandal, putting on shoes. So here again, same thing as Tisha B'Av. Generally speaking, it's usually assumed to refer to leather shoes, which basically means that you should have non-leather shoes during Tisha B'Av and during the week of Shiva. There is a whole discussion, which we're not going to get into the details. There are some posting that say it's not just leather shoes, even other normal, you know, sneaker shoes that are not leather but are used comfortably in the way that you might use leather shoes, that also many poskim will say is problematic, but that, you know, Ikra Din, it doesn't seem that we necessarily poskim like that, depending on who you ask. So that, you know, I think the custom by many people is to be lenient about that. If you have, you know, non-leather shoes that are comfortable, there's definitely what to be machmir, and if you want it to be machmir, but it seems that the Ikra Din, it seems that it's not, that you can wear other shoes, but, you know, that's the deal with that. Some people just wear pairs or don't wear any shoes. If you're in the house, you know, you don't even need to put on shoes.
Regarding the socks, can a person say that shoes?
That's a good question. I would say, again, I didn't look up for this specific thing. I wasn't mine so much. I think, in general, in theory, it might be okay, but practically today, that's not the way that you would appear in front of a melech. So, what'd you say? So that's what I'm saying. I think because of that reason, meaning that even though, in theory, in their house, where, again, if, what'd you say? So slipper, you know, slippers also is better than no shoes, I think. But again,
slippers nowadays, yeah. You could have nice slippers.
It's true. Again, also, I mean, in Israel, I don't know what you wear in front of a melech here in Israel. I don't know. You wear shorts and a t-shirt. I don't know. Sandals, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, yeah. So I don't think they say you can put on leather shoes to daven. If you're going to go outside, that's a different discussion. Okay, meaning you're not supposed to go outside, but if you need to go outside, so there are, if you need to wear other shoes, meaning you don't have good shoes that are not leather, there may be room to be makil, and you stick in what they say is maybe put a little bit of dirt in your shoes. That's, I think somebody, I don't know if we mentioned it, but that's what some people say is when you're in the cemetery after the kavura, before you go back, so you usually change into your non-leather shoes right after the kavura. So the minhag that many people have is to, if they don't have other shoes with them, which maybe they should, but if they don't, so the minhag that many people have is to take dirt of, you know, air and basically put it into your shoes. Which again, by the way, on Tisha B'Av also, there, you know, if you need to, there may be what to be said for that practice. Maybe better not to, but... Yes, it's not hard to find shoes that are not leather these days, assuming that you hold that that's fine. It's quite easy, in, you know, here and in most places to find. I don't think it's a big deal. So, what'd you say? What do you mean by that? So that's a good question. I think today, again, I'm trying to remember if I saw a discussion about this in terms of Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur. My impression today is that most people know that there are so many shoes out there that are not made of leather that it may not have been true a while ago, but my impression is that these days, I wouldn't think that it's such a problem. Meaning if you know, then you have to check the shoes carefully, and you have to, sometimes it's not so easy to find out if they actually have leather or not. But if you know that they don't have leather, my impression is that I don't think there would be a problem with chashad. Suspicion that people would suspect you today, because today it's known that there are a lot of shoes out there that are not leather. That's my impression. Again, I didn't see that quoted anywhere in print, but I didn't see anything against it either. That's my impression. If you hear something, if you heard something else, you can let me know. Okay, so that's Anilas HaSandal. Tashmish HaMita, of course, is marital relations, which again, same thing as Tisha B'Av. This is generally, also there's not really too many exceptions about this one. Next one, V'Asr Likros, but yeah. Yeah, so that's a, yeah. So sorry, that's not, should I put it in here? No, I didn't. It's assumed that the Jehar Chakos would be in place also. Now for Tisha B'Av, there's also a discussion about this. In general, we try to be machmer on Tisha B'Av also. There are some that are makil in the daytime and not at night, and there are slightly different opinions about it. But in general, certainly during Shiva, we would say that the basic, the major Har Chakos certainly should be in place, meaning hugging and kissing and things like that for sure should be in place. In terms of the other ones, you know, the passing things, that already, I think it's better to be machmer on the passing things also, but it could be for that already. There are those that are makil. I don't remember offhand. Let's see if he says here. Yeah. So again, it could be for passing things if you have a spouse. It could be that's less of a problem. I don't see it here. I'm sorry. You know, so he says here. Hold on a second. Yeah, yeah. So he says here, he quotes, again, I don't know about the Ashkenazi, he quotes from Mordechai Eliyahu here. It could be the Ashkenazi Post say the same thing, I'm not sure. But they say that the rest of the Harchakos, meaning the not big ones, meaning the non-hugging and kissing, the rest of the ones like passing and making the bed and stuff like that. So those they say that you don't have to machmir for during Shiva. So could be that's fine. But again, the big ones, sleeping in the same bed, hugging and kissing. So those three generally those should be kept. Okay. Next. So in terms of reading the Torah, meaning learning Torah, you're not allowed to learn when you're in Avel. This again is the same halacha as Tisha B'Av, but maybe a slightly different reason. Okay, again, without going into the details here. For Shiva, the idea of by not learning is based on, the Gemara says, is based on a pasuk which is quoted for Yechezkel. A lot of these halachas, by the way, come from Yechezkel, that Hashem basically killed Yechezkel's wife in the Navi to try to illustrate what the Jewish people were supposed to how they were supposed to react when the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash was going to take place. So, but Hashem told Yechezkel to demonstrate to the people this is what's going to happen, to get them to do tshuva, whatever it is. So he basically said, I'm going to take away your wife from you, and I don't want you to keep all the halachos that, according to the Gemara, are supposed to be kept for a normal avel. So from the psukim there, we derive what he didn't do is what we are supposed to do, meaning whichever isurim he didn't keep, we have to keep those isurim as an avel. So for one of them is based on the idea of keeping silent. Okay, this one actually maybe similar, but whatever it is, basically that you're not supposed to be verbal. And part of not being verbal in this context seems to mean that learning Torah as well. Okay, as opposed to Tisha B'Av, where it's more based on the fact that Torah is misameach you. That does not seem to be the same case for Shiva, but again, the idea that learning Torah is generally usur. The Heter we mentioned, I think, already one of the other weeks, to learn the halachos of Tisha of Avelos and other issues related to death and mourning, obviously, those things are permitted. Again, we mentioned also about learning in the base of Avel. We discussed already that if it's for the Nishmas, the one who passed away, so then again, there seems that the minhag is to be makel on that also, especially if you try to derive some sort of appropriate lesson from the Mishnayos that have to do with the setting. That's generally accepted that it's okay. Okay. Next one, also b'sheila shalom. I think we mentioned this also previously, that you can't greet an Avel. You can't say, hi, how are you? Okay, you can't say shalom. There's not really supposed to be any greeting, verbal greeting, when you're in the base Avel. Some people have the same practice for other people in the base Avel. Okay, that's already not necessarily Me'ikra Din. That's, again, some have that practice, maybe some don't. But certainly for the Avel themselves, he's not allowed to greet, and he's not allowed to be greeted during the Shiva. Quickly through the rest of the things here. The Kvisa, so washing clothes, is generally usher during Shiva. And this one I did right here, the first line in source number 2. Avol also lechabes ksuso kol shivas hayamim. Okay, so an avol is not allowed to wash his clothing for all 7 days. Afilu b'mayim levad, even if it's just water without any other cleansing material, that is not okay. After Shiva, we'll get to that in a minute. But again, that's generally not okay. Again, if you have underclothing of some sort and you have nothing else, maybe there's room to be makil. But in general, it's generally not allowed to wash clothing and to wear freshly washed clothing during the days of the Shiva. It's supposed to be really. Again, that's already similar to the 9 days as well, in terms of that, partially at least. Maybe not exactly the same thing, but it's at least roughly parallel. That's in terms of Kvisa.
That's just the Avel washing his clothes.
So again, you shouldn't have other people washing his clothes for him that he can wear. Okay, and he shouldn't be wearing freshly laundered clothes in addition.
But his clothes can get washed. He's not wearing.
It's like sinful pleasure to wear.
I don't know. I mean, really, somebody else probably shouldn't be washing his clothing at Bichlal. Why do they need to wash his clothing if he's not going to wear it? That's just what done. I don't know. I think we say usually that it's not that they're. I understand, but I don't think you're supposed to have other people washing it for you. Again, if it's needed, I think then maybe they say that it's okay to wash it afterwards. But I think in general we say that you're not supposed to have other people washing it for you. Give me 1 second here. Again, so he mentions here, I'm just looking at Rav Goldman's book here. So again, he quotes the poskim that say that if you're makamat sorech, what I mentioned before, okay, socks and undergarments, stuff like that, makamat sorech, if you need, you can be makil to have. To have people do that, to get that washed. But yeah, it seems, I don't see it straight out here. I think that we don't say that somebody else should wash your clothing for you, even if you're not going to wear it right away. Yeah. Okay. all he quotes here is that it could be that if you gave somebody your clothing to wash before you became an oval, then already might be mutter for them to wash it for you. But afterwards, it seems like it's not okay. That's the impression you get. Okay. That's kibus. Nen chay batifas harosh ukfias hamita. So these two things are not really, we're not really done today. But there was a certain way that they used to wrap up their head with some sort of head covering, turban of some sort, when they were in Avil. And kfias hamita, there was a practice that they used to take off the beds. Maybe they used to turn over the beds on those days and put it on the floor and whatever it was. Both of those practices are not generally done today. Okay, we don't do either one of those for whatever reason. The Rishonim already talked about it. It's not a new thing. This is already an old thing that is not done. But those are mentioned in the Gemara. What'd you say? Well, the Shulchan Aruch already talks about these two things. That Tivas Rosh and Kfiyas Hamita are already mentioned. Meaning, this is from the Gemara, but yet you already find, you know, the times, you know, in earlier times that they, for whatever reason, the Kfiyas Hamita and the Tivas Rosh were disbanded. Meaning that they're not kept anymore. It's interesting. Meaning that's not normally the case, but here again, it may just be because we don't do the. Meaning we don't have the same kind of beds they had then. Again, the post can talk about this a little bit. Ativas harosh. Most of us don't wear anything on a rosh aside from a kippah. But even those that do, it's not the practice anymore to wear these types of garments on your head when you're in Ovil. That was at the time was something which was very very popular. Today it's not really. It's not. So what that means, I guess, is that there may be some situations where you do have some sort of change in practice based on what society is doing, even though normally halacha doesn't work that way. But sometimes, you know, it is possible that maybe the halacha will take into account the way people dress. Again, another example is begadisha or begadish, that the types of clothing that might be prohibited based on men wearing women's clothing and vice versa may very well change based on what the society is actually wearing. And the details are not for now, but the concept is certainly may be affected by what's going on, you know, around the rest of the world. Correct. The halacha doesn't change. But here again, if this halacha is based on this, you know, what they used to wear, so then maybe, again, I'm not making this up. This is already from, you know, the times of the Shulchan Aruch already. They talk about this, that these things were not practiced anymore for, you know, for various reasons. Okay. That's that. The last thing he mentions here, actually not the last thing. Also, laniach tefillin miyom harishon. So this is another thing that you're, let's say that you, let's say whatever day the kvura is done. Okay, let's say the person dies on Tuesday, then the kvura is done, let's say, on Wednesday. So the halacha is that even if the kvura takes place on Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, so in theory you might tell me, based on what we've learned previously, that maybe after the kvura you should put on tefillin. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So here the Gemara says, and the halacha is that the avel is not allowed to put on tefillin during the first day. Now again, there's discussion about this if the kvura takes place a while after the death. The word is, the bottom line is generally what's practiced is that in most cases, in most places, you don't put on tefillin after the kvura, whatever day it is. That's the usual rule in most situations. That's again because based on Yechezkel, where Yechezkel was supposed to wear his tefillin, so we say we're not supposed to wear our tefillin. Again, that's just the first day. Again, there's another discussion about the second day in the morning, which we're not going to go into now. But the main halacha is for the first day, in terms of tefillin. Okay, giyutz is really related to the question of pressing clothing together with laundering. Tisporas, okay, haircuts and shaving also is usher during shiva. Okay, that's pretty, you know, pretty set. Simcha, of course, any actions of simcha are forbidden. That we'll come back to in a little bit. Ichui kara kol lamed yom, that we're not going to go into now. But that has to do with if you have your beged that you did kriya on, okay, that you tore kriya on, so you're not allowed to put it back together again, to sew it up during 30 days. If you're talking about a parent, then maybe you never sew it up. But again, you know, that's that part of the halacha. The chol divrei avelus nagin b'mayom b'malayla. And then they say basically that avelus applies both in the daytime and at nighttime. There's no difference between them. That's essentially the rundown on most of the major halachas that apply during the week of Shiva. Okay, any other questions before we move on to the Shloshim and the Beis Chodesh? And we went through them very quickly. We didn't deal with all the pratim, but at least you have a basic idea of what's out there. Yeah, good.
Just a general question.
Yeah.
It's just another question we're getting. The books are very, very flexible on this issue.
Which one? Which issue?
All the books have been like some this and this.
So, I don't know what it is. It's some, yeah. Right. Well, there are certain things that are, you know, that have a lot of different minhagim, and certain things that seem to be pretty set. For whatever reason, Avela seems to be something that that seems to be subject to minhag. Like a lot of things about Avilah seem to be very subject to minhag, both in terms of these rules and also in terms of what we've discussed in past weeks in terms of the funeral and before the funeral. I'm not sure exactly how it came to be like that, but it seems that, you know, it was very, very local in terms of what is done, and maybe not local, but in terms of different minhagim that, you know, that we follow minhag much more than, you know, normally we're, yeah, minhag is followed, but usually you have a halacha and you try to fit in the, you know, you figure out how to deal with the minhag afterwards. Here, it seems like, well, the halacha may say one thing, but yet really depends on what's actually done out there, and I don't have a good explanation for why specifically here there seem to be so many, again, it could be because, I don't know, maybe my father might say that something to do with the fact that the halachas in general are geared towards identifying your emotions of loss and grief and trying to help you work them through to get better. So because maybe there's a little more flexibility in terms of different areas. Again, today you can explain, let's say, some of the things about washing, you know, bathing today. That's maybe not during Shiva, but during Shloshim already. You know, we'll discuss that in just a second. Some of the things to begin with, you know, maybe the chumra based on minhag, and then today when society is different, people bathe much more today or cut their hair. We'll get back to that. Maybe that, you know, that already we could explain a little bit better, maybe. That I guess we'll get to in a minute when it comes to those issues for Yud Beis Chodesh. But during Shiva, I don't know. I think most of these things are pretty set. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so for Shloshim, so what are the things that are relevant for Shloshim? Most of the things we mentioned before are only during Shiva. There are a few things that are relevant for Shloshim and a couple things that we'll, you know, expand on a little more. So in my outline here, so number one, we have washing clothes and having new clothes. So here, let's go back to source number two for a second. Here we have, in the second line, it says, well, achar Shiva mutter. After Shiva, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's permitted to wash your clothes and to wear freshly washed clothes. The Ramah, if you skip the next line, va'achar shiva shari, okay, the Ramah says, v'ha'olam nagu bo isher, but the olam, meaning people in general, have the custom, this is sort of what Revorlin was talking about before, people have a custom to say that it's aser. Okay? So what happens here, if you look at the... yeah, and basically we'll just say it like that. Okay, for meaning for Ashkenazim, Sardim generally will follow the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch here, and there's a lot of leeway for them to wear, you know, to wash clothing and to wear it after Shiva. For Ashkenazim, the universal minhag in theory is to be machmir, meaning to not wear clean clothing during the Shloshim. That's the universal minhag in theory. Let's read the rest of the Ramah, then we'll modify the universal minhag in theory. You'll see what I mean. What the Ramah says here is v'nog and shalom achar lof shom tchila. The minog is that another person wears it first, v'achakach lof shom aval, then the aval can wear them. V'aminog yikar, and that's the minog, okay, meaning that's the primary minog, that should be what's followed, v'chein nog and dinoselu, and that is, that's what people do. L'achar shiva, after shiva. V'im lof shom achar rak shah achas da'avakach, and if you only wore it for an hour, that's also sufficient. So, what do we do with this? Let's say the following, okay, there are a number of achronim that say that when it comes to, again, undergarments, okay, undershirts and, you know, socks and stuff like that, so those, it's very hard to go for a whole month. Those many achronim say are not included in this halacha, okay, meaning the Ramah himself, who's machmir, has a custom here, he, according to these achronim, was not referring to those types of garments, and therefore those things would be mutter. Okay, that's very widely accepted today by Ashkenazim. All right. The question is, what do you do about, let's say, shirts and pants and dresses, skirts and stuff like that? So for those, again, you know, the minhag of the Ramah, which is in theory accepted, is that you're not supposed to wear, you're not supposed to wash and wear these types of clothing. That's basically that's the main minhag for Ashkenazim. Now, what basically is done, as we said before, as the Ramah already said, is that when you need to wear them and you don't have enough to get through the month and your work or your whatever, your family won't take too kindly to you wearing dirty clothing for a whole month, so then we do what they say here. I mean, basically, either you get somebody else to wear them for a short period of time, even for an hour or two. Sha'achas is the discussion what that means, but let's say it means for an hour or two. That would be sufficient. The other option some people suggest that maybe you can like put it on the floor and stamp on it. Okay, meaning something, and by the way, some people say this is true also for the 9 days, which already happened, but just so if you weren't aware, during the 9 days also the same halachas apply, that you're not really supposed to wear new or clean clothing during the 9 days. And the custom is generally that what people do is try to put on all their shirts and pants or dresses, whatever, before the 9 days, at least for a short amount of time, even just a few minutes even, you know, or something like that, in order to be able to make the claim that they're not freshly laundered clothing. If you can't do that, then you know, you can put them on the floor and you can stamp on them a little bit. Yeah. Right, no, so meaning that he was machmir that you shouldn't do that.
That it doesn't help because you don't need to do it.
Yeah, but he
said crumple it up.
Right, I'm saying, but he didn't say you could just wear the clothing while they're clean, right? He said you should do something, right? Yeah. So that I was giving you the more lenient approach, meaning something you're correct. Some people say that you shouldn't even throw it on the floor. I think Rav Yoshev also said that it's not a valid approach. But for those of us who are not going to, I don't know what you're going to do. So again, if you would crumple the clothing, my solution in my house is very easy right now. Just get your baby to spit up on them. That's the easiest thing. It happens anyway. You can put it out for 2 seconds. It's already dirty. That's my excuse for wearing dirty clothes. What'd you say? If they would fit, in theory, yeah, it shouldn't matter who they are. The point is, well, I guess put it this way. Let's put it this way. When it comes to the 9 days, it's harder. Meaning during the 9 days, anybody else is subject to the same halachas as you are, unless they're Sephardi. If you get some Sephardim to wear your clothes last week before Shavuot Shechal, though, so then you can get away. They can get away with it. Maybe that's okay. But it's harder to give somebody else to wear the clothing during the 9 days. That's really, again, if you didn't do it, you can still make it, and you can still wear the clothing. Okay, because today's laundry is a question of what that is. But Mechachila, what you're really supposed to do during the 9 days is do what we said, to put on the clothing for a short amount of time before the 9 days start. When it comes to the shloshim, though, so then for sure that's an option. You can give anybody the clothing and they can wear it for a short amount of time, and that's fine. Okay, even kids, whatever it is, that would be permitted. What? No, so this is only for shloshim. This is only for shloshim. Now, new clothing may be different. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. This is what we're talking about now during shloshim is mainly freshly laundered clothing. All right, so that's when it comes to that. That's generally what's done. Okay, so you give it, again, either you stamp on the floor, according to some opinions that allow that. Key quotes here, by the way, from the Geshar HaChaim, who felt that was a valid eitzah to stamp on the floor, again, to give it to somebody else to wear for a short amount of time. That's generally what's practiced during shloshim, if possible, for normal clothes such as shirts and pants and skirts and stuff like that. Again, in terms of new clothing, that's generally should not be done during during that time. There are some postmen that allow you to get new clothing, and this we'll discuss again for the Yudbeis Chodesh. If somebody wears it not just for like an hour or two, but wears it for a couple days. Okay, and this question definitely has come up. I've definitely had it from a few people. But again, if you have something, again, maybe it's better. If you don't need the new clothing, it's better not to get any new clothing. But if you need it, if you feel that it's important so that there is room to be makil. And again, what's done, what some of the Achronim say, including I think the Geshar HaChaim and maybe the Aruch HaShulchan, that you get somebody else to wear it for a couple days for a certain period of time, and then it's not considered to be new anymore, then you can wear it. That's what's done when necessary. Okay, that's in terms of washing clothes and new clothes. Number two, shaving and haircuts. So what do you do about that? So shaving and haircuts are not allowed during shloshim. Okay, that's the halacha. The truth is that shaving and haircuts, in theory, may not even be allowed during Yud Beis Chodesh in the 12 months, and there were different opinions about this. Okay, meaning in the Ramah, they talk about all sorts of different opinions. Here we can read about it in source number 3, and you'll see that's not what's actually done, but you'll see what is done. Source number 3, Al-Kol HaMeisim Galech Lachar Shloshim. Okay, so it says you're allowed to shave or take your megalech, literally means to shave, but maybe also haircuts. In their time, it probably was the same thing. Alav v'imo, achegaru chaverov. So what he says here basically is if you're sitting shiva and shloshim for a relative who's not a parent, then you can shave right after shloshim. If you're talking about a parent, av v'imo, so that we'll come back to in a second, in terms of the rest of these laws, but the concept that we have a yudbeis chodesh, that we wait for 12 months after a parent passes away, is actually based on the mitzvah of kibud avayim, believe it or not. Okay, the reason why you do it is not that you're in avelus for the sake of mourning, it's rather avelus for the sake of demonstrating kibud av ha'im for your parents. Meaning we say that you should honor your parents both when they're alive and also when they're not alive. And this is the way that we do it, by keeping these customs of avelus for 12 months. So for that, you're actually also not allowed to shave or get a haircut until, he says, at sheyigur b'chaverev, until your friends start to come up to you and say, hey buddy, nice scruffy beard there, you might think about getting rid of that beard. They're gonna, they're gonna have a good time with you at work if you don't get rid of that. That's achigur b'chaverev, okay? Meaning if that happens, then you're allowed to shave. Let's just read another line in the Ramah here. He says here, v'ein ha-regel, actually, we're gonna skip the regel, okay? The Yom Tov questions are interest questions, which we don't have for now. If that happens to you, then you should either look at the books or ask a Shaila. Because sometimes when a Yom Tov comes, even during Shloshim, there are some that are Makil. Certainly after Shloshim, many people are Makil for a haircut. That's a little bit of a different discussion. If you skip to the next line in the Ramoth, which is the small print in the next line there, Vashir Gaara Yeshba Plugta, there are different opinions about what, how much time is considered to be this amount of time that it takes for somebody to, you know, for your friends to go make fun of you or to start saying that you better get a haircut or shave. He says, V'nagim B'gimel Chadashim. The Ramoth says, the custom in those times was 3 months. I'm not sure how well that sits with many of you. And then he says, V'makomos Eilu Nagim, Shein Mistafrin Alva'im, Kol Yudbeis Chodesh. And then he says, some places they didn't do it for 12 months. Whoa. So now what do we do? So again, without going into all the details here, the question is, in modern society, we have a real shiloh, because if you don't shave, for a month to begin with is difficult. But certainly to shave for males, to not shave for more than a month, and even for haircuts, is going to be very difficult. How are you going to do that? Okay, Gary? Yeah.
Well, Rav Rolian said after the Shloshim, which was Rosh Chodesh Av, he said it would probably look a little odd during the 9 days if you shaved.
Right. So here's the interesting. Yeah. So in Israel, you can right. In Israel, you can get away with that. What did you say? So that's actually an interesting question. So there are the postmen actually talk about that, and they say that during the 3 weeks, you would actually be able to be makil. Meaning, if it's during the 3 weeks, then you could have been makil. Meaning, if your shloshim was over. So that's a separate issue. That's a separate issue. Meaning, there's one issue that they say the Ramah says here. Kigon shehichbet alav saro. Okay, so if it gets in the way, let's say of eating, or your hair is too long, it's heavy for you, so then already there's room to be makil, to cut. Yeah. so that's one thing. But in addition to that, so let me make 2 points here. Okay, number one, the sheer ge'ara. Okay, just for the first point we have to make is that the sheer ge'ara of how long it takes before people start yelling at you. So today, many modern poskim assume that today the shir ga'ara takes place immediately after shloshim, meaning already after the 30 days, it's already assumed that even if your friends didn't say anything to you, it's assumed, it's understood in society today that they're just being nice, they're not saying anything, but really people would look at you and say you really need to shave. Haircuts maybe a little bit longer. Haircuts, you know, maybe you could wait 3 months, maybe not, but certainly for shaving, for males, you definitely after 30 days is generally accepted that that's mutter. Bisman hazeh. Okay, that's pretty widespread. That's fine. Okay, the question, once that's accepted, so now you talk about, let's say that shloshim is done during the 3 weeks or during the 9 days, for example. So here it depends. Many poskim are makel during the 3 weeks. If your shloshim is over during the 3 weeks, so many poskim are makel and say that that's similar to a different case in the Gemara, and you can actually shave during that time. You may not want to, but you could in theory. Some poskim are even makel during the first part of the 9 days before Shavuot Shechalbo. But that already is a bit more questionable. And certainly during this week, during Shavuot Shechalbo, the week that Tisha B'Av actually falls on, that generally is accepted that you wouldn't shave, even if the shloshim falls at that time. Again, last week, from last Rosh Chodesh Av through Shabbos, you know, has a more lenient status. So that, you know, that's iffy. So meaning that if you don't need to, it probably is better to be machmir. But if for whatever reason, especially in Chutz La'aretz, if it was important to shave during that time, it could be that, you know, that there may be room to make up for that. Okay, that's the background for that aspect of the halacha. And for Sfiras Omer, by the way, it would be the same thing as the 3 weeks. Okay, meaning if it happened during Sfiras Omer time, that you don't normally shave, if you don't normally shave, and then Shloshim was over during that time, then everybody would agree that there's room to be makil in that case. Okay, so now, that's in terms of shaving. Let's talk about the main issue. Actually, one more issue before we get to the main points. That is number six, switching places in Shul. So, there are different opinions about this, but in general, it's accepted that certainly during Shloshim, and maybe even during Yud Beis Chodesh, that the person, the Avil, changes his place in Shul, doesn't sit in the same Makom. Okay, now if you just have a lottery and you have Makomos Kavuim, then you have a little bit more of a question. You have to figure out how to do it. I don't know what you did here. Did you work out something?
Well, or? I didn't have
any. Oh, you don't know. Okay, fine. So you're fine then. You're better that way. Okay. But that's the generally accepted custom that's certainly on Shabbos and maybe even during the week that you switch your place in Shul during Shloshim. And again, during Yud Beis Chodesh, there's different opinions about that.
Certainly during the week, maybe on Shabbos.
What'd you say?
Books that certainly.
Oh, so maybe I made a mistake then. Yeah, so take it back. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Certainly during the weekend, maybe on Shabbos. And Yud Beis Chodesh also is a question. There are different minhagim about whether to switch your place during Yud Beis Chodesh. Either way is legitimate. Either way is legitimate if you do switch or don't switch. Legitimate. Again, it may depend on what's available. I guess these days, around here, there's enough seats around in the shuls that you can usually find one or two in some place. And especially during the week, there's no problem. Okay, on Shabbos, you have more of a question. But okay. So that's again. There's some more details about that, but that's the general halacha. The really big question that comes up the most often, I think, during Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh is the question of simcha events and social gatherings and being invited out and all those kinds of things. Okay, this is very complicated, not because the halachas are complicated, but because the applications are very complicated. Let's look here. It actually starts from the Gemara. There's two different aspects. I did not put the Gemara on the sheet, but I'll tell you what the Gemara says. And I quoted you Rashi in source number 4. The Gemara basically has this idea that you're not supposed to. Actually, we'll make 3 categories. Okay, the Gemara has category number 1. You're not allowed to go into what's called the Beis HaMishta. If you look at source number 5, the Shulchan Aruch that I put here is quoting from the Gemara there. Okay. After 30 days for a non-parent or for a parent, after 12 months, you're allowed to go into a Beis HaMishta. Right? You're allowed to go into to a Simcha Hall, which may have been places where they did weddings and stuff like that. Before that time, it seems like that's forbidden. Okay, why is that? Because when you go to that type of place is a Makom Simcha. And especially if there's an event happening there, and that's probably what it means, a wedding or some other thing like that, that's considered to be a certain element of Simcha that you're not allowed to have. Okay? That's category number 1. Category number 2. If you look at the next line in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, Umiyu Simchas Mereus Shaya Chayav Lefroa Osa Miyad Mutar La'asosa Miyad Achar Shiva. Okay? But if you have a Simchas Mereus, okay, meaning if you have something, a certain element of Simcha, which you have to pay back right away, then you can do it after Shiva. What in the world is this talking about? So if you look back at Rashi in source number 4, so Rashi tells you the following thing. He says, Simchas Mereus is Su'udash Osin Reyim Vahuvim Zayimzeh. Okay? Simchas Mereus is a Suda that very close friends used to do with each other. Meaning, that basically what they would do is have one guy would invite the other people in the group or the other person over for a meal. And then afterwards, it would almost be like an obligation, a responsibility for the second guy to invite the first guy over for a meal, in response. So that was something which was very widely practiced. It was almost like expected to have to do that. So the Gemara, that's a lower level down. That's what the Gemara said. Rashi says, "Lo avi simcha kolchach." It's not such a simcha. But that doesn't mean that it's mutter. What it means is what the Shulchan Aruch says is based on the Gemara. Miu, again, what I read before, simchas meriah shahaya chayav lefro sam miyad. If it's your turn to invite somebody over and you have to do it right away because it's expected that you do it right now and that's it, so then the halacha is that that's mutter. Okay, but if it's not expected to do it right away, so then it seems like it's usher. Avalim eno chayav lefora, usher likanis ad lamid. Alavimo afal pishchayav lefora, usher alacha yud beis chodesh. Okay, this is a little bit of a complicated thing here. Let's say the following for now. Okay, today the concept of Simchas Mereus might make sense in that to be invited to somebody's house that you're close with is an enjoyable experience.
Someone
but the con- what'd you say?
Someone mentioned once that if you have 2 families.
So we'll get that in a second. We'll get that in a second. What's unclear though is this idea that you're expected you have to invite them back right away is very, very strange in today's society. We don't usually have that. It may be that you're nice and you want to invite them back, but it's not expected that it's part of the takanon of the group that in order to be part of this group, you have to invite everybody in the group every other week. It doesn't work like that today. So therefore, this issue of Simchas Mereus is very murky when it comes to the practical applications of how this should apply. Okay, really very, very unclear what to do with this. There are different opinions. If you speak to different poskim today, and even in the Sfarim, it's not so clear exactly how to deal with this. I'll just tell you a few of the opinions that I've heard that that are more accepted. But again, there's really a range here, and it's not so clear. The opinion is not really based on sources. Well, oh yeah, the Shulchan Aruch says this, and this Achron says this, and that Achron says that. It's really very, very iffy. What's generally done is that during the week, people are generally machmir. Not everybody, but people generally are machmir in most situations during the week to invite both other people over for meals, to go out to eat with other families or other people in a restaurant. Again, if it's a business meeting, maybe that's different, but in terms of just a pleasure visit to a restaurant with another family is maybe problematic. There are some people that say that maybe you can have it with a small amount of people or small units, okay? So one opinion could be that some people will say you can do it with one other family, meaning you and your family can go with one other family to have, let's say, to a restaurant or to have a meal together or whatever it is during the week. Others, again, you mentioned, others might say that you could be 2 families together. Again, the question is just how do you define what is a Simchas Mereus? What would you say?
As the number of families grows,
exactly.
Happy and...
Right, so that's exactly the concept. Meaning it's something that you can even feel internally. Okay, you're not going to feel comfortable hanging out with a bunch of other families together, you know, for the whole year afterwards, maybe towards the end, but it's something which emotionally inside you should feel. You'll understand the point without even having the halacha to tell you. You'll feel it already. So again, you know, the rules are not even so absolute, because you can feel it yourself. So if you feel that, you know, more than one other family is uncomfortable or awkward or inappropriate, that makes sense to follow. And I would say l'chachila is probably best to follow that also. Again, you may have some that will tell you that you can have two other families, whatever it is, but the more you have, the more simcha-based it is, and you know, the more problematic it's going to be. That would be the way that I would look at it. There obviously are going to be exceptions, okay? Meaning if you're having people that are going to visit that you're not going to be able to see otherwise, okay? If you're having people that visit from America, family members also may not be included. Certainly family members that are also in Avelis are probably not included. But even other family members, if this is the time that you get to see them, or it's what we call like a davar ha'avad, okay? If it's an opportunity that's going to be lost otherwise, so, you know, there may be room to be mekil in many situations. But in terms of the halacha, you should be aware that the halacha itself is important to keep before you run to the exceptions. Okay, that's the idea of simchas merias during the week. On Shabbos, there's a whole nother machlokas. On Shabbos, some people say it's the same rules, and you can't invite or be invited with more than one other family. And others say, well, no, Shabbos is different because we have a concept on Shabbos of ein avelus b'for hesed. You can't demonstrate in public that you're doing things which are, you know, not doing things which are mourning type of activities. Okay, so that's something which on Shabbos may be more of a leniency. There are different opinions about whether that applies to this. Okay, meaning some poskim, some achronim hold that when it comes to aspects of shloshim and yud beis chodesh, that rule does not apply, and others say it does apply. So my rabbi actually, in Wa'ir, Rabbi Willig, so he actually was machmer on this point. He felt that even on Shabbos, you shouldn't necessarily have more than one family over to invite them, or to be invited with more than one family unit. Family unit could be a whole family of five or six people, but more than one other family unit, he felt, was more problematic. In many of the Sfarim, you'll find that they're mekel. They quote a few achronim in the back of the Shulchan Aruch that actually were mekel at him, and they felt that even to have more than that, to have a few families, not to have 20 families, but to have two or three other families, you know, some poskim held that was perfectly permissible on Shabbos, because otherwise, especially if you do that on a regular basis when you're not an avelus, it looks very suspicious. When not, people will say, oh, they're not having other families because they're an avelus, and then already, you know, if you accept the opinion that that concept does apply during Shloshim, that would be, you know, that, you know, we want to avoid that. So again, here there's certainly room to make it to follow those opinions, but there's an issue. So again, if you have no reason to invite more than one other family, I don't know if you, Dafka, want to do that. If there's an important need to do it, you're having people coming to visit or whatever it is, you know, there's room to make it. Okay, there's definitely room to make it on that. But again, there are different opinions. It depends on who you speak to. You may get different answers. And again, the rules are not 100% clear cut when it comes to that aspect of it. Okay, we only have about 7 or 8 minutes here, so let's just finish up very quickly. The third aspect that is not, I didn't put it here, is the social gatherings. Okay, meaning what is considered to be a social gathering? Where does that come from? There's another halacha earlier in the Shulchan Aruch which they talk about a caravan, a shayara. And this, again, I apologize, is not on the sheet. It's still in Shin Pei. It's from, I think, the Yerushalmi. They talk about basically an avel going on a caravan trip together with a lot of other people. So exactly. So that's usher. In those days, they may have done it for business. But it was understood that when you went for business, you went with 40 other people in a caravan and a convoy through the desert to make sure everybody was safe. But it wasn't just business purpose oriented. It was apparently a lot of fun. It was a very enjoyable social experience. And therefore, again, I guess somebody wanted to make a comparison to some Las Vegas trade shows, for example. That's like the Shayara type of thing. Okay, they have a certain type of very jovial environment, which maybe we shouldn't be part of anyway. I don't know what goes on in Las Vegas, but with those types of things, that's the bit. Those halachas are actually the basis for the concept that a major social gathering should be avoided while you're in Avelis during Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh. Again, the rules are not 100% clear, but that's the concept. So what does that mean? It basically means, again, if you have a major, let's say, a major event which is not functional in purpose, meaning if you have an educational event, not a shir, like right, so that a siyum is a different discussion. A siyum may be mutter to participate in the siyum, maybe not. There's different opinions about that. But anything which is, you know, let's say even a functional meeting, okay, a meeting with, let's say, the Rosh Mo'atzah, okay, you have to discuss very important issues in bed, whether, you know, people that are visiting and they have to want to see if they can buy houses, whatever it is. Not about me, of course. I just had a meeting like that recently. So if you have that, so that's certainly not included in this.
But like for lawyers or accountants?
Again, if it's a functional meeting, then that's permitted. If it becomes a big social, you know, big scene, so then already it could be you can go for the parts that you need to be there for. And when it starts to turn social, then maybe you should leave. Okay? He holds here, and Rav Goldman holds that for going to a kiddush on Shabbos morning, he holds here that's mutter, based on the concept of Shabbos. My impression is that many posts hold that's problematic. Okay, so my suggestion would be not to not go at all. If you feel like you want to go, go for a few minutes, take a little bite to eat, whatever, and then don't hang around for the rest of the socialization. That's personally my suggestion. But again, he's making on that here, so that, you know, there's room to make if you feel the need to do that also. But those kinds of events, which are purely social in function and not, let's say, watching a show might be better. That would be my overall distinction when it comes to this. The other aspect of that also is listening to music. Okay, music goes together with the weddings, but music also is often being played at a social gathering. That's also a big discussion. Okay, how do you deal with music? And again, the bottom line is that music is usher during Yud Beis Chodesh, during Shloshim. Live music certainly, and recorded music, many posts say, also is included. There are some that are make on recorded music, so that if you feel the need, you know, if you really, really need it, the recorded music might be okay. But certainly live music would be problematic. But again, go to a place that you, if it's necessary for some other reason other than your enjoyment, other than the social purpose, there may be room to allow it. Okay, so there are all sorts of cases where you have to go to your
3 weeks.
It's similar, yeah, it's similar. But here, let's say you go to your kid's god party or whatever, something like that, you know, to a school event, you know. So there already, nobody else is going to understand why you can't go in, and your kid is going to be very upset if you don't go in to watch them. So here again, this case has happened, you know, number of times. There's room to be made, okay? Meaning if you're going not because you want to enjoy the music or the social gathering per se, you're going because you need to watch your kid, whatever it is. So there already, again, when necessary, there's room to be made, and just try not to enjoy the music too much. What'd you say? Okay, don't say it all. Just kidding. So again, that's the overall estimation. Again, the very specific cases you have to work through, and it's worthwhile to ask shilas. This is probably, again, the most common shilas during Shloshim Yud Beis Chodesh. Again, feel free to ask me or whoever, you know, whoever else, these questions. They come up a lot, but it's, again, a very, very major issue. And the last one, in 1 minute, basically, this is a whole major discussion about other types of simcha events, okay? Weddings, bar mitzvahs, all sorts of things like that. Each one is an issue unto itself. Each one may have a different psak, so it's hard to say. The bottom line for overall is most of them are generally not okay, but again, wedding more so than the other ones. Okay, this is, if you want to read this whole thing here, they talk about it. We don't have enough time now. Generally speaking, you should not go to weddings during the time when you're in Shloshim Yud Beis Chodesh. There are some that are mekel only to go to the chuppah. Personally, I'm not comfortable with that if you're not a close family member. If you are, there's much more room to mekel based on that, and even stay for the whole thing, just don't go in for the dancing. If you're not, again, some people will be mekel if you just go for the chuppah, even if you're not a close family member, if you're close friends, whatever it is, there may be room to mekel. But again, you know, be careful. Don't just jump in and, you know, start making rationalizations. Think through it carefully and maybe speak to, you know, get an etzah or a psak that confirms that. But again, there are different opinions about that. Other things are a little better. So bris milah generally is okay to go for the bris itself, but it's preferable to avoid the suit afterwards. Okay, preferable to avoid the suit. Again, if you're a very close relative, like the father or the mother or the baby or the grandparent, then already there's more room to make able to be there. Maybe don't eat. Again, there is a whole literature about this also, which we don't have time to get into now. Other things may be a little bit less problematic. Bar mitzvah, also, to be there for whatever ceremony they do is probably okay. To be there for the seuda and music, whatever in general, preferably should be avoided. There are exceptions, which we don't have time to get into now, in terms of the mishamsha, if you want to go and, you know, be the waiter. So again, that may be a kula, that may be an acceptable leniency, but you have to be the waiter. You can't be serving, you know, put one fork down for a minute and then run away and go start schmoozing. Okay, that doesn't work. You really have to be doing the function for a photographer, let's say, for the whole time that you're there in order for that to work. That's, again, in 1 minute, that's basically the review of those issues. That could be a whole shiur by itself, which we don't have time for now. But, you know, that's basically just an overview of those halachas. Okay, we'll touch later. Okay.